This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. What makes your stomach growl? Is it true that no two snowflakes are exactly alike? Why does popcorn pop? Maybe you've asked yourself questions like these. Maybe your kids have asked you. The author of Newsday's How Come column, Kathy Wallard, has the answers to these and hundreds of other questions in her new book, How Come? Every Kid's Science Questions Explained. And Kathy, glad you could join us today.
Thank you. I'm glad I can be here.
So why does popcorn pop in the first place? That was a good question. I've never really thought about that.
Yeah, I get it a lot. And, you know, ordinary corn won't pop. You can't throw that
in
the microwave. But popcorn has this incredibly, the starch inside that resists, you know. It's very, very strong. So that when it's heated, the natural, you know, water that's in the corn starts expanding inside the starch, and the starch doesn't break and it doesn't get squishy. It just keeps expanding and expanding. Steam builds up inside. And finally, it just, when it reaches way above the boiling point, it explodes and the entire kernel turns itself inside out from the explosion, which is like, it's a very violent little event happening in your microwave. They actually think that people first started eating corn in the form of popcorn, so that's pretty interesting.
See, I learned something new today. Learn something new every day. That's a true expression.
Yeah.
How long have you been writing the How Come column?
I've been writing it for more than two decades for Newsday, and then it turned into three books, How Come Planet Earth, and How Come in the Neighborhood. And finally, we decided, you know, we needed to put everything together into one brand new big book with all updated answers for 2015, and that's what this book is. All the questions in it, all 416 pages, were asked by like real kids and adults from all over the world. So nothing, we didn't come up with anything. They did.
How did writing the How Come column come about? How did you get into that line of work?
Actually, I was in graduate school in journalism. I had an undergrad degree in physics, and I was there, and I was like working on stories about all kinds of things about health and science, and I wanted to keep going, you know, as an intern. So I suggested this idea of having kids send in their questions, and we would answer them every week, and the editor at that time thought that was a great idea, and so I got to do the column freelance from then on. And it had a lot of staying power. I mean, there's just, you know, because questions just keep coming and coming. Parents have questions. You know, their kids ask some questions. Adults have questions. I got questions from kids as young as kindergarten, and people in their 80s and 90s were sending me questions. So, yeah, all around the world. The book's been published now in 11 countries.
So you decided to write this latest book as a compilation of all the questions that you've been getting, and I'm assuming you must have plans for another compilation type of book as more questions come in.
Well, I don't know. We'll see, because this is sort of the best of the three books, and it's completely updated. But, yeah, there may be another book in the future, but there's around 200 questions and answers in here, and they're the real answers. They're not just like a couple of lines that don't really satisfy your curiosities, but a couple of pages with some great, colorful, funny art by Deborah Solomon, who's an animator, and a lot of fast facts and, you know, sidebars and places you can go down the rabbit hole, you know. You know, you can kind of get lost in this book.
You can. I know I did. It's a fun book, and I guess that's one of the things that you had in mind when you wrote this, was to keep it fun and to keep it very interesting.
Right. While giving people, you know, real explanations that maybe, like, homeschoolers and teachers use this book, because teachers don't, you know, have a lot of time to teach something that's outside the curriculum or to answer a lot of, you know, questions. So keeping this around the classroom at home, you know, kids can look it up or you can look it up for them.
Let's get the answer to another vexing question, Kathy. Do camels' humps store water?
Right. That's like,
that's
what we all used to think. And it turns out that the hump is actually made of fat. It's a tremendous amount of fat. And as the camel, you know, goes along without eating or drinking, the fat is slowly digested and burned for energy. It leaves a little water behind, but mainly it's for the energy. And at the end of a long trek through the desert, the camel is incredibly thirsty, and it will drink a ton of water. But what I found out when I was researching camels that I didn't know was that I used to think that camels sort of came from the Middle East. We have this image of camels in the desert. It turns out that camels came from North America, that they actually started right here in the United States, and that millions of years ago, the beaches of California were just covered with these enormous, almost dinosaur-sized camels just roaming up and down the beaches and into Canada and into the Arctic. So I thought that was really cool. So they ended up going to the Middle East via Canada, connecting, you know, the Bering Land Bridge when it was connected to Asia, going over to Asia, and then the rest is history.
See, I learned something else new today. That's amazing. I never knew that about camels.
Yeah.
How do you do the research to get the answers to all of these questions?
Well, over the years, I've done all kinds of different, you know, I've called people, experts in the field. I've gone to libraries. I've looked at medical journals. It all depended, you know, on what the topic was. I've had some great contacts. Astronomers, physicists, you know, doctors have helped me. So, yeah, it's been really fun. It's been a total education.
What's the process for coming up with all the questions? You said kids had a lot of input into this.
Well, kids, it's all kids and adults sending, mailing in or emailing the questions. So all of the questions came from real people. We didn't, you know, come up with the questions, they did. For example, one of the questions I get over and over is, why do our fingers wrinkle in the bathtub? And, you know, all over the world, kids want to know this. And I, you know, in the beginning, the answer was kind of dull. It was like, well, the outside of the finger absorbs water and pulls away from the inner skin, and then our fingers wrinkle. Big whoop, you know. But it turns out that they found out in the last 5 years that it's all under control of the nervous system, and it actually seems to have a purpose. And the purpose, they think, is that our, you know how a tire, a treaded tire, sheds water on a road so that we don't go sliding across the road in the rain, that the wrinkled fingers actually, water sheds down the grooves of the fingers, and it helps us keep our footing on a slippery surface. Like you get out of the tub and you're on a tile floor and your toes are wrinkled. That actually gives you a little bit more traction than you would otherwise have.
Who would have ever thought that?
Yeah. Yeah, somebody called it the Michelin effect.
What's the Cheerios effect, by the way?
Oh, the Cheerios effect is it's pretty complicated, but it has to do with Cheerios clumping together mysteriously in the center of a bowl and also forming a ring around the outside. And the same thing happens like if a man like is shaving over the sink. The cutoff hairs tend to do the same thing, and it has to do with surface tension of water and electrical attraction of the Cheerios and the milk. And it's kind of complicated, but it's a really interesting story that's in the book.
Kathy, what's your philosophy about questions? All questions are good questions, I take, is how you view them.
I do. I think, you know, sort of we're born with curiosity, and then I think that in a way we can lose that because we're sort of forced into a fairly narrow view of things. But if we kind of let go, we'll realize we still have all these questions, even as adults. You know, why does metal feel colder than the carpeting? You know, why do fingernails make that sound on blackboard? How do snowflakes form? And then the most asked question, why is the sky blue? I still get that, you know, all the time.
Why is the sky blue, Kathy?
Yeah, why is the sky blue? Well, it turns out that, you know, how when we put a prism and have sunlight go through it, we see all the rainbow colors. Well, when sunlight streams down through the atmosphere and runs into gas molecules like oxygen and nitrogen, it's broken up into those rainbow colors. But blue comes out most strongly. It shoots out into all parts of the sky. So we see the blue kind of drowns out the other colors in the spectrum. So we see blue from everywhere, but actually this is really pretty interesting. Violet and purple colors come out even more strongly. So why don't we see the sky as purple? Well, our eyes aren't that sensitive to purple, and the purple's a little dimmer, so human beings see the sky as blue, but other animals don't necessarily see the sky as blue. So, for example, to a bee, which sees all the way into the ultraviolet range, they would probably see a purple sky, and other animals would see a slightly different colored sky. So we're all experiencing sort of a different sky color.
One of my favorite movies is A Christmas Story. I just love that, and part of your book is based on that. So you really can get your tongue stuck to a metal object if it's really, really cold.
Yeah, you totally can, and it's totally painful. And the reason is that the tongue has got all these little holes, like crypts or pores, and it's got a lot of water on it. So if you put your tongue on freezing metal, the tiny amount of water in all those little holes on your tongue immediately freezes, and you are literally, your tongue is stuck to the pole. Sorry to say.
It does sound painful.
The only way to get it off is to, like, pour warm water over it. You know, you cannot rip it away, or you're going to be in a really painful situation.
You say your book is every kid's science questions explained, but as a grown-up, I enjoyed the book immensely and learned a lot from it. Was that one of the intended effects?
It was, and which is why sort of officially we say 8 to adult. Even though it's in the children's section, a lot of adults buy it for themselves. And I'd say that probably a third of all the questions or more to the column over the years came from adults and not just kids. So, yeah, it's for everybody.
One of my favorite questions is, why do we sound better singing in the shower? Why is that?
Yeah, it's really mysterious. I was saying it's like you're suddenly bathroom idle. You know, it's like you go into a shower stall and it acts almost like a sound mixture, because if it's made of tile or glass, it absorbs very little of the sound, but it reflects a lot of it back. So for up to 98% of the sound, and then the sound sort of reverberates and your voice is amplified, so you have all this vocal power. It acts like a bass booster. And in addition to that, it smooths out, so maybe you're not like totally on tune and maybe it isn't perfect, but it smooths everything out like a sound mixer, and it makes you sound like, you know, you can really sing, you know? It's kind of amazing.
It is amazing. And when I saw that, I said, yeah, you know, that's true. I've noticed that. And you explained exactly why it occurs.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten to meet any of the kids who read your column or read your books? Have you ever gotten any feedback from them about what you're doing?
Yeah, I've met kids at book fairs and at conferences. Yeah, they seem to be really excited, and they'll ask me more questions, which I may or may not be able to answer. And yeah, I think somebody on Amazon a couple weeks ago, I was amazed to see a comment by a kid who was around 18 or 19. He was going to college, and he said, "This book changed my life. I wasn't interested in science before my parents brought this into the house when I was little. And over the years, it, like, sparked something in me, and I started reading more and, you know, like, looking things up, and I just wanted to thank the author." And I thought that was, like, you know, that really touched me. So very happy about that.
So feedback like that has got to make you feel really good about what you're doing, like you're really having an impact.
Yeah, and this is I know you can't see it, but it's a big, chunky 416-page book with full-color illustrations done by the amazing Deborah Solomon, who's an animator in New York and has worked for Disney. And it's just a lot of fun, too. It's not dry facts.
And how long did it take you to come up with this particular book?
I worked on this book for about a year, and it was pretty nerve-wracking. And I was still working on it a few months before it came out. So, yeah, because, you know, things are constantly changing. You know, literally facts and, for example, whether Pluto's a planet, what they found on Mars. You know, we literally were doing things at the last minute to make sure it was absolutely, you know, up to date.
I think you even tackled the topic of how was the world created. That's a pretty complicated one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's more the mechanics of it. It doesn't get into, you know, first causes or anything, but yeah. And why we don't feel the Earth spinning. You know, the Earth is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour at the equator. And, you know, why is it we don't have this sense of motion? You know,
why aren't we all running around dizzy all the time?
Exactly. Well, it's like when you're on a plane and it's going like at over 700 miles an hour, but it feels like you're almost stationary until something happens, like there's air turbulence. Or in a car going at a steady rate. As long as it's a steady rate of speed and we're moving with it, we don't sense the motion of it. But if the Earth were to suddenly, like, stop or dramatically slow down, you know, we would all, like, fall to the ground, and it would be a very dramatic event. But thankfully, it just keeps spinning.
Kathy, is one of your goals with this book to stimulate an interest in science among kids?
Yeah, I think science and just the world around us. You know, I don't think everybody has to become a scientist, but I think to wonder about things that you see every day throughout your life, you know, is a good thing, you know, to wonder, like, how bees are attracted to flowers or what they can see, or, you know, to wonder about, you know, the night sky and what's in it and what it all means, and, yeah, and why the sun looks white overhead but it looks red when it's on the horizon, which is answered in the book, you know, just
okay.
Everything.
Kathy, thank you for talking with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Kathy Woolard is author of Newsday's How Come column, and her new book is How Come? Every Kid's Science Questions Explained.